trees. So I want to welcome everyone here. Liz, do you want to talk a little bit about your book and about your series?
Okay. Thanks for having me. My series is the Mrs. Claus Mysteries, and it's the main character is, her name is April Claus, and she was running an inn in Oregon, and when one day an enigmatic bearded man came to visit, and they had a whirlwind romance, and she discovered later that he was Santa Claus. And so, you know, they fell in love, and so she decided to marry him, and now she's living in the North Pole, which is kind of its own special world. There are elves and talking reindeer and sentient snowman who can sort of move around, and living in the castle with all the Clawsed relations around them. And it's sort of like a mashup of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Downton Abbey, and, you know, kind of, there's kind of an upstairs downstairs vibe between the Claus family and the elves. And but even though it's Santaland, which is in Christmastown, which is sort of the ultimate cozy village, you know, there are some bad elves, and murders happen, and during her first Christmas, she had to solve a murder of an elf, and because the constable there is probably, he's not the most able, but because he's not really used to solving too many murders, but so for her second year, she's introducing her favorite holiday to Santaland, which is Halloween. And again, not all the elves are really happy to have Halloween coming to Christmastown, which is supposed to be Christmas all year round. So so there's a little conflict there, and it heats up, and then another murder unfortunately happens, and she has to step in and try to help solve it.
Hey, Tracy and Patrice, do you want to talk about your series and about the fifth book?
Go ahead, Tracy. All right, Patrice, I'll start off. Thank you. Our series is the Salem B&B Mystery Series, and our fifth book just came out, Mrs. Morse and the Vampire. And we had so much fun plotting this one, because we had... The farther that you get in a series to write, the more that you know it, and the readers keep us on track with their expectations of what they want. And so they were very willing to go from witches to actually a vampire, and they and a ghost, of course, because Jack is a ghost. So, yeah, our series, this book was starts off at midnight on Halloween. And one of our readers said that we had nailed the Hawthorne Hotel, so that was good, because Salem celebrates Halloween like there is no other. I don't know if you've all been to Salem for Halloween.
No, not for Halloween.
When we were traveling from, we're coming back from Greece, and there was a couple in front of us they were from Europe somewhere, and they were going to Salem for Halloween this year. Like, that's how big of a deal it is.
So, oh, what fun.
Yeah, it's very cool. We feel very privileged to be able to write Charlene's stories.
So let me ask each of you, or all three of you, how did you come up with the idea for your series? Liz, I'm particularly fascinated how you created this whole Santa land. You know, brought April there, and you created this whole backstory for Santa Claus, who I always thought was older than time.
Yeah.
But apparently that's not
the way it works. It's a little different than probably what most people are thinking Santa land is, because I wanted to have a whole bunch of just mixture of different people and elves there. And in Santaland, the position of Santa Claus is actually an inherited title in Santa Land, in my Santa Land. And so the current Santa Claus has taken over from his brother who recently died, and he never expected to be Santa Claus. So it's a little different than most people are probably expecting. I kind of wanted to base it a little bit on the royal family of Britain, because I don't know, Harry and Meghan had just gotten married, and I was thinking, you know, what a weird world for that person to be dropped into. I'm thinking of Meghan, and I was thinking, well, what if, you know, what if Mrs. Claus was also not from Santa Land? And, but the reason I came up with it was I wanted to write a cozy mystery holiday series. And I was talking to my editor, who I've worked with for 20 years, which is really, really odd in publishing. So it's longer than my marriage, I think. He and I were talking about maybe Mrs. Claus, you know, maybe she was played Mrs. Claus in a local pageant, or she ran a, you know, sort of thrift store of Mrs. Claus. And I thought, I had been writing a historical mystery series, and it was, you know, when you write a historical mystery series, every sentence is, you know, something you have to sort of fact check and think about. And I thought, I just want to go pure fantasy with this and create a whole new world and really go the whole hog and put it in Christmastown make my own facts for this world. And that has its own challenges too. It's a little like creating your own history. So in a way you are creating another historical mystery series, because you're having to fact check yourself in your own world all the time. But that's how I came up with it.
Do you keep a plot book or an outline so you remember?
I do have outlines, and I have long lists of characters who have appeared and what's happened on every page. But, you know, I wish I were more organized about keeping a plot Bible. But next series, I'll be sure to do that.
Do you have readers reach out to you and say, wait, this isn't right? I know North Pole.
Not
I know
so
Santa.
Far.
Not yet.
Not so far.
Okay. Like, nobody's challenged your version of the North Pole.
Well, I've had a few reviewers saying, you know, this is not what I was expecting Santa Land to be. And you know, I understand that. And we all have our own idea of what, you know, Santa and Christmastown should be. So, you know, but people have been very, very, very accepting of a little different idea of what the mythology should be. So it's been fun.
Well, and actually Kirkus gave you a positive review, which I've been a little down on Kirkus in the last few years. They were not saying nothing nothing nice about anyone. And they said good things about your Santa Land mysteries. And PW gave the first one a star. So, I know you mentioned
the
review. Yeah. Tracy and Patrice, do you want to talk about how your series started and how you came up with the idea?
You've got this one, Patrice.
Yeah, I'm going to answer this, yeah. Well, Tracy and I both have the same agent, and our agent actually contacted us. He had an editor that was looking for someone to write something similar to Mrs. Muir and the Ghost. And it was supposed to be humorous and, you know, just a light mystery. And Tracy and I had never written a mystery, but we knew we could, so we did. And it's been quite an adventure. We have now finished as 6 in the series. And started off, you create your environment, and Charlene Morris was widowed, and she lived in Chicago, and decided that she needed to move because there were too many memories of her husband. So she bought this bed and breakfast online. It was actually a mansion in Salem, and it had been empty for a long time, and it was like a bargain basement price, so she just jumped on it without even getting there to see it. And when she showed up with her furniture and everything, she was more than surprised to see it was everything that the pictures had looked like and more. So she couldn't understand why she got it for so cheap. But after the realtor left, she started to hear noises. And when she went to bed that night, she was awakened by someone who was sitting in a room, and he was all dressed up, looking good. But she thought, he must be a crazy person. So she tried to run away and hide, and he just was there all the time. So that was Jack, Jack Strathmore. And he's become a very important person in the book. So that's Tracy, want to carry on?
No, you did a great job. Well, thank you.
So, Mrs. Morris' books, say each one revolves around a holiday. You've done Halloween twice. Not true?
Oh, gosh. Is that true? Maybe it is true.
It seems
I don't remember.
You've done Halloween a couple times, Christmas, the 4th of July.
Oh, you know, I think that you're right. I think
okay,
it
so
is
it's not conscious.
No, maybe. I think, yeah. Does John tell us kind of what it is that he wants us to be able to do for, like, for the setup, Patrice? I think so. Or Evan. Because when we do the books, they're, you know, we have them like three at a time contracted. So it was maybe conscious on John's part, but not really on ours. For us, we just like writing a story.
Yes. When he suggests something, I mean, we just go from there. We take, you know, we love, as you said, to create the stories and, so far, it's been working out pretty good for us.
So, can you talk a little bit about the... now, do you keep a Bible, a plot Bible or a character Bible? Because there's two of you. So how does... Do you each write certain characters? Or can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, we write, actually... We're very grateful that we get those copy edit sheets.
Yes.
We're able to kind of keep that, you know, I have it in a file behind my desk. So I'm able to kind of draw that up and look at it when we get ready to start. It was very helpful because we were writing them they were coming out every 6 months. So we were writing them like very quickly. And like every 3 months we were writing, you know, 3 to 4 months, we were finishing one of the books. So Charlene was very fresh in our mind, you know, and we had a very clear idea of what, of who Charlene is as a character and the Salem, because we had actually gone to Salem and we did a tour of everything that Charlene would have done as somebody new to the area, so she could tell other people at the bed and breakfast. And I think that we did Zillow for the house. And when we did the wine cellar, I got a notification yesterday, actually, about our house is still on sale. It's still on the market.
Oh, that's so funny.
So how do you work out writing back and forth?
I can answer this. We go chapter by chapter. So one will start with chapter one, and then the other person, like, we do it online, so then we read the chapter and do chapter two, and then we send it. Sometimes we do two chapters at a time, and we just, you know, do a light edit of each other and then go forward. And we probably do the first draft in about less than 6 weeks. And then we do a second round, then we do a third round, and it ends up we probably go through that book about 5 times before we submit it.
No, more than that. Probably closer to 8.
I mean, all in 3 months.
And do you have an outline? Like, do you know who did it, how they did it, how they're going to be caught, or do you ever change each other's?
Yes, Tracy and I plotted out, but Tracy is the plotter and I'm the pantser. So that works out for us because I don't think I would be able to do it on my own, but it's wonderful the way it works.
How about you, Liz? Do you plot out ahead of time or?
Oh yeah, I'm a big plotter. But sometimes I'm not always the best plotter, so I'll get, you know, three quarters into an outline and realize this really didn't work as well as I thought it would. So then I have to sort of, usually about halfway through the book, I have to stop and re-outline toward the rest of the book because different things have occurred to me during the story or new characters pop up. Last book I was writing, a whole new character popped up that I wasn't expecting to even be there. So, and sort of took over the plot. So, you know, sometimes I things happen and, all my best plans kind of go awry and I have to start over and replot. But, the outline really helps me feel like I can go forward. It gives me a little confidence, kind of my spine.
That's one of my favorite questions that you answered without knowing is, do any of your characters ever do things that surprise you or you just can't make them do what you want them to do?
Well, like I say, I mean, sometimes they're just, I'll think, you know, we need a character, like, you know, I need a character to do something here. And the character comes on stage and he's, you know, he's much more dynamic than I was expecting and actually somebody I want to spend a lot of time with. So I'll try to work him in more, you know, so.
I think that happened with us because in our book, Charlene is one of her biggest regrets is that she and her husband never had children before he died. And so she ends up hiring this teen girl that she kind of feels sorry for. And by the end of book six, I don't want to give anything away, but I mean, definitely Avery is such a big part of Charlene's journey. And I don't think that we had planned on Avery, you know, but she just really, we love her. Tattoos and all.
Yes, we do. And so do the fans. I mean, I don't think anyone who reads our books, I mean, they just love the characters and they become like family to all of us. And Avery was, I think we needed a reason for something to happen. So it was like a motivation thing that either got us started. So we brought Avery in and it just was one of the best things we did.
Do any of you, either of you have any despicable characters that your readers love to hate and that you have the urge to knock off every once in a while?
No.
They have to hate someone in every new book.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
I don't think there are any despicable people in Santaland that I want to get rid of. No. But I usually try to put a little likability even in the annoying bad people. It's part of what I like about fiction is just seeing a little nuance in everybody and seeing that everybody's motivated by what they consider to be good reasons, and it isn't always according to the protagonist's point of view. But I like to explore, you know, why people do what they do maybe see the good in even the most cantankerous people, and maybe see where good people sometimes have little selfish motive going on too. And nobody's perfect. So.
How do you bring characters in to find somebody to kill them? You know, I know that's always a challenge in small town cozies. Obviously. Mrs. Morris runs a bed, runs a bed and breakfast, so she can bring in all kinds of characters. But Liz, I would imagine the population of Santaland is pretty, pretty static. Will
Well, it's getting smaller.
Wait, will April? Will one of your mysteries maybe be set in Oregon? And
yeah, we've been thinking about that. Because she's kind of she has two. She's still running her inn in Oregon, and there's sort of a shadow cast of characters that we hear about in Oregon. And so far, she hasn't gone back, but we're hoping that sometime in the future there might be a Christmas in July in Oregon that we'll finally see. She lives in a town called Cloudberry Bay, and it's full of characters too. So we want to maybe bring her back and have what happens when Santa and elves show up in a little town on the coast of Oregon. It would be fun.
It does sound like fun. Have any of you ever had readers, I guess Tracy and Patrice, more you because you're further into the series, and say, wait a minute, that character had brown eyes and now they've got blue eyes? Or, like, do they like to call you on mistakes?
So far, we've been pretty good. The series that we got busted on was actually my fault, and it was an indie series that we're doing called Sandpiper Bay. And I had put Pacific instead of Atlantic, and we got slammed. So, yeah. Luckily, it was ebook, so we were able to fix it, and now it's fixed. But, yeah, readers are very sharing.
Have you found that more so with social media and with the access in the last year and a half? Readers have gotten tremendous access to authors.
That is true. That is true. But for the most part, we have just been so very lucky in that we have very positive feedback, you know, for all of our series. Even with the mistake, they were still like, this is a great book. So.
How about you, Liz? Do they?
I don't think I've had readers call me out on mistakes so far. I mean, I've seen mistakes in my books before and wondered, oh, who's going to spot this first? And then, but nobody has. I'm really terrible about character descriptions. And I mean, I could write a whole book without even describing what color hair people have. If it were my world, you know, I would just, you know, people would just be a blank slate all the time. But to me, it's more of a challenge for me because I have to double check, like, oh, what color eyes does she have, really? And because that's not how I really think of character, surprisingly. I don't know how other people think, but I'm sort of, I'm more of thinking about their personality rather than their physical characteristics. And so it's, I always have to go back to that copy edit sheet and look at, you know, what their age is, how what their eye color is, things like that.
I have to agree with you as a reader. Every time there's one series I've been reading for years, and every time I see that the character has curly auburn hair, I'm like, no, she doesn't. Like, that's not how I picture her. So, yeah. Kensington to me does really fabulous covers.
Yeah, very lucky.
Do any of you have input into them, or can you each talk about them a little bit? The detail, especially on this one, is crazy. Like, there's the little striped socks, and you can see the cat ears, because I've been thinking it was a bunny rabbit for a very long time.
What they ask from us, I think, and Liz can say too, it's that he asked us kind of what it is that we think would be good for the cover, you know, but we're just like, you guys are just doing such a great job, you know, sticking with, you know, the holiday or whatever it is that, yeah. I think they do great. I actually friended the guy that is our cover artist on Facebook, and seems pretty like pretty cool guy.
That was cool.
Yeah.
And we always wanted Silva to be on each and every cover, so they always, you know, feature the cat. But Silva has quite a personality, and she's like royalty. You know, she just feels that she's, you know, little uppity, but she's adorable.
She looks, yeah, you have to get a copy of the book, but she definitely. And how about,
well, for the,
so Liz, do you have elves? Like, is that kind of what you will bring through, or?
No, I have, well, I do the same thing that you all do, obviously. They ask for general ideas, and I think for the first book, I did suggest, there were, you know, it was elf feet, you know, and, coming out of the cover, and it was, but for the second book, the challenge was trying to get the idea of Mrs. Claus and Halloween into the same, you know, visual element, and that was a really hard one. And I had, you know, all sorts of bad ideas I was throwing at them and just kind of spitballing whatever I could think of. And then the cover artist thought of the little pumpkin ornament hanging off the tree, which is a great, it just is such a great connector of Christmas and Halloween. And they even brought over the little spider that was in the first cover and, as sort of a continuity element. And it's just a really great, a great series, cover treatment, I think.
Yeah. Very lucky.
Maybe the best I've had. I'm thrilled every time I see it. It's really great.
So, can you each talk a little bit about, did you always want to be a writer? How did you come up with it? I know Tracy and Patrice met in a writer's group, a critique group earlier.
Yes, that's true. We did. We met in 2003 when I moved from Washington State to Florida. And I had written, I'd always wanted to write from the time I was very little. And my mom saved one of the stories that I had written that I still have. And it's got the lined paper and it has this giant baked potato that is supposed to be a pet ant on the cover, but the story had a middle or a beginning and a middle and an end, so I'll take it. But I knew, and I got a story published when my kids were little, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so easy to do. So I need to put this aside and raise my kids and then, you know, come back to it. And yeah. But we all know how that goes.
It did take us a long time to, you know, actually make it, if that's even the word. But we just persevered. And Tracy started with small press. I went the indie route. So I put my books up. I had like 6 completed books that my agent had tried to send to, well, she did send it around New York, but that, they were the only game in town. So, you know, I had these wonderful rejections that I thought were just so amazing. So I put, you know, one book up, and the readers found me. You know, I was telling like 100 books a day, and it was the most exciting thing in my life. And so then I had 5 more books that were perfect and ready to go. So that's how I started.
How about
and then you,
you
got, she went to Montlake as well, and she was, yeah, you did very good.
Thank you. You too.
How about you, Liz?
Yeah, I was, I started out writing romances. Actually, when my only writer training, I guess you would call it, would be, I was a theater major in college, and I wanted to be a playwright. And after, when I was 21, I ran away to New York, and after I graduated college and was writing plays in my apartment and not, you know, of course, not getting them published. So I started writing prose and fiction just to kind of keep myself entertained. And then I started working at Silhouette Romances for a while. And I started working as an editor and a freelance editor. And I published some romances and some women's fiction. And that's pretty much how I got started. I mean, there were a lot of things that landed in my top drawer that will never see the light of day, I hope. That started me off, but, you know. When I found romance, that's when I finally realized I could get published and write the stories I really enjoy, and it's actually I find writing books is kind of like being your own theater director. You know, you're kind of stage directing everything and being all the characters, and so it's a lot of fun for me.
That's like the perfect dream, to like graduate college in front of to New York and live in a, well, I imagine that it was a dark and dim apartment with your lone typewriter.
it sounds a lot better than it probably was, but
it's very
cool. Exciting. But.
Yeah, that's like totally the dream, and you did it. Congratulations. Yeah. That's cool.
I won a playwriting award in my last year of college, and I think it came with a prize. It was huge for the moment. It was $1,500, I think.
Oh.
And that's what I thought. Okay, now I'm rich. I can go to New York. And you know, $1,500 in New York, even in, you know, in the 1980s, that lasted about 2 weeks, I think. So. It's good to be young and foolish, is what I think.
And take those, you take those leaps of faith, absolutely. Yeah. A lot of people would be afraid to do it, so pat yourself on the back. Very cool.
Did that, did you draw from that when April decided to marry Santa Claus and move to the North Pole, move to Santa Land?
Actually, I was more thinking with Santa Land, I moved from... Well, I began in Texas, so I'm pretty much a warm weather person in my bones. But my husband and I, about 15 years ago, we moved to Canada, and we lived in Montreal for about 10 years, which is so cold. I mean, really, just it was cold on a level that I had never experienced before. And you know, where you're walking down the street and your eyelashes kind of freeze to your together, and you know,
that's awful.
Yeah. And you know, and slipping on ice and slush, and so that was what I was sort of that's more what I was thinking of in terms of April moving to the North Pole, is you know, me moving to Montreal, because it's a big change, you know.
Yeah, because I think New York is already kind of cold and slushy and whatever. So to go from there to Montreal.
It is. But man. Montreal has, the Canada, they have a lot of snow. I mean, it's a lot of snow. I don't think New York gets snowstorms.
It does, but then they clean it up.
Yeah, they
I've been there the day after a snowstorm, and they, I don't know what they do with it, but it's gone. You don't see it.
And then it warms up a little bit, you know, and it's kind of, it's cold, but it's not this constant, you know, you're walking on 3 inches of ice for 4 months. So it's...
Patrice and I could never do that.
Yes, because you're both in sunny Florida.
Yeah. No.
Well, especially if Patrice was from Vancouver, over on this side of Canada, I mean, we get snow maybe once a year, and everyone panics.
It's like Seattle.
You know, when I was young growing up, I mean, maybe twice a year we would get 2 or 3 inches, but it wasn't often. And when we had snow, it was kind of exciting. But once I was in my early 20s, I had taken up skiing. So then you're praying for all that snow in the mountains. You don't really want it in the city, but when you have it, it was kind of fun. New experience, but yes, it's warmer and it doesn't last, and it's just Vancouver's just a wonderful, wonderful place to live.
Well, the thing that surprised me too when I moved to the eastern part of Canada was I was expecting, well, it's going to start snowing and everybody will have to just stay inside for 6 months, and you know, and there won't be anything going on. But Canadians love winter. I mean, when winter comes, the skis come out, the snowshoes come out, people are skating. I mean, it's their time. And that was kind of amazing for me to see. And that was sort of a Santa Land kind of moment, too, where I was like, oh, I'm in a different world here. You know, these people love winter. They love snow. And it was just not quite what I was expecting, although I don't know why, because, you know, people adapt to their environment. And they have lots of fun activities in here in the winter. So, you know, it's just a different world.
So you each write romance books as well. Do you have a preference, or it seems to be a frequent, you know, authors will write romance and mysteries. Or where are the overlaps in the style? Or
I think for me, it's just story. So when I was very first published, I was writing young adult. I had a young adult series, and I was also writing medieval romance. And I had a young adult mystery series that I was trying to shop. I just like the story. I don't really care about the genre. For me, it's about the character and telling that character story.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like telling the story, and also I like all of my romances. When I was writing romances, were humorous romances, and I started out writing kind of the sweet short romances that I don't even know there aren't a lot of people even publishing them anymore. They've kind of been absorbed into inspirational romances, I think. But I was just writing, you know, short, funny little romantic comedy stories. I love old rom-coms and, you know, old black and white movie kind of romances, and that's what I was mostly interested in, and just writing comedy. And I think a lot of comic writing is in cozy mysteries and you know, some romance now too. A lot of funny romances and are coming out now, and I think that's sort of where I belong in terms of. I've never written a just you know, hot boiling hot romance. I don't think that would be my natural place. So, and
to count you out for erotica.
Yeah, I'm not really a good erotica. I've edited erotica. And I think it's fun, but it's just I don't see myself ever being able to write that convincingly. So.
Yeah, me either. But Patrice also, she does very hot and sexy, and she's also very funny. Her candy bar series is amazing.
Yes, I've written like two series that are romantic comedies, and I had so much fun writing them, and I think the world needs laughter, especially now. So it's amazing that my first series was the candy bar, and it is now selling probably better than most of my others. It's very popular right now, which is great to see. But I have done little romance, suspense, and, you know, I have a very various types of romance. But even my sexy ones, I mean, they're done with love and passion and emotion and laughter too. So I don't think, I definitely don't do erotic.
Yeah.
Heartwarming stories.
And I guess mysteries, murders are very passionate a lot of times. Like the murder is committed out of passion for money or for love or for some, you know, a lot of times for that. Which brings me to a question I forgot to ask earlier. How do you keep coming up with different ways to murder people?
That's easy. You just got to read the news, watch the news. People are crazy. People are absolutely crazy. And so, yeah, that part's we don't have a hard time.
Okay.
Well, I do try to think of North Pole specific ways for people to you know, keep plotting murders, so that, you know, it has something wintry or something specific about or something out of the ordinary for murder weapons. So I, that's to me is the most challenging, but motivation is always there.
Yeah. Death by ice skate.
Yeah.
You've got all kinds of things you could do. The snowman flood.
So
I can't wait to read your first book. I'm so excited.
Oh, they're fun. They're really, really fun.
Because I'm thinking of Nightmare Before Christmas, which was an amazing movie, and it had the Halloween Christmas mashup. So
yeah. That's I'm very a little curious. What we were going for. You know. So yeah, that was it.
I think you had a brilliant idea. The Santa Claus. I mean, it's just so sweet. And who ever thought that you could make a mystery series and make the town, make the, you know, all the toys, and it would just be. I think it's very imaginative and exciting, and I'm sure that this series is a big hit. So congratulations
to you. People seem to be liking it, and I really like writing about. I don't know. There was something about during the pandemic when everything kind of seemed bleak and just writing about elves and snowmen and talking reindeer, I just thought, oh, I need to escape into this world right now. So perfect. I think that comes through more than anything is just, you know, I was doing some authorly therapy through
a lot of people writing. Had a hard time writing, you know, and that was, I was asked a question on a workshop and people wanted to know if we had a hard time writing during the pandemic. But for me, it was so wonderful to be able to dive into this safe world that we had created and be able to make, you know, people smile and be happy. So we wrote.
Yeah. Now, are you all part of a writer's group still? And did your group continue to meet during the pandemic, you know, through Zoom or?
Zoom, yeah. We did soon.
Yeah, there's more writer group stuff going on now than ever, I think, because of Zoom. You know, there's a Zoom every 5 minutes, it feels like, between, you know, just Sisters in Crime alone. You know, I'm getting Zoom notifications all the time. So it's been really great to meet so many different authors that I never thought I would meet because they're from so many different parts of the country. So... you know, even though Left Coast Crime was closed and VoucherCon got canceled, you know, I've been socializing with a lot more authors than I expected to when it all started. So,
yeah.
So, if we have a pretty good writers group at the library, pretty active. Actually, one of the members won the Mystery Writers of America Award last year and was published by Macmillan. Last year, so they're very active. But if people listening or watching are interested in writing, what kind of advice? I mean, other than just sit down and write, but what kind of networking and who should they talk to?
Sisters in Crime, I would say. If you're male, female, we have Misters in Crime. it's one of the best writers organizations out there. It's really well run. They have local chapters most everywhere in North America. And it's just, they have writer's advice. They have speakers. It's pretty wonderful. And I think there is an online chapter too, the Guppies. I don't know a lot about that, but so it's pretty accessible and it's very worthwhile. And very supportive. It's a great network of people.
Yeah, I'm always amazed at how generous authors are, especially mystery authors. There doesn't seem to be any kind of jealousy or competition. They just seem to be very open and very sharing.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the amount of time that, you know, famous authors will spend with these organizations is pretty awe-inspiring to me, so...
Yeah, they give back, which is great. And you just never know when you're going to hear that one nugget that is just going to make a difference for you. So
are you both Sisters in Crime members? Or
I'm Mystery Writers America, Romance Writers of America. My local chapters both, and I'm Thriller Fest or Thriller, whatever the Thriller organization is. I belong to that, but we don't do the in-person meetings anymore. So, Saturday I'm usually just busy writing or doing something else. So, I don't do a lot of the Zoom meetings.
And I don't belong to any of the groups anymore, but Sisters in Crime has really got me interested. I think I would like to join up. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, I belong to Mystery Writers of America and also Crime Writers of Canada, too. So they're all good organizations. Sisters in Crime seems it's a little more active on the local level, and it's got a lot going on. But Mystery Writers of America is also a great organization in terms of, especially in terms of advocating for authors, and business-wise, it's really great.
Good to hear.
So, Tracy and Patrice, you mentioned that number 6, Mrs. Morris, is finished and ready to go. What happened?
Mrs. Morris and the Pot of Gold.
Oh, okay. So
and guess when it takes place. Yeah, St. Patrick's Day. You guessed it. It'll be out next August, actually. So.
And then do you have more books contracted after that, do you think?
We are hopeful. We're hopeful.
And how about you, Liz?
We've got Mrs. Claus and the Evil Elves is another Christmas book. It comes out next year. And I've got 2 more in the pipeline. One will be another Halloween novella. There will be an anthology coming out during Halloween. And then the following Christmas, there will be a New Year's book, I think I'm going to have. It's going to be Santa Land after Santa comes back from the big trip, and what happens, how all the elves and people kick back and relax until New Year's.
That's sort of like Rudolph's Shiny New Year.
Yeah.
Yeah. As I was reading, I kept the old Guthrie Renker claymation, puppetmation things.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Came a little bit to mind.
That was my research. So.
That's fun research. It's all the good stuff.
Yeah, I had mentioned off the air that I had a I used to have a co-host, and he is a huge Christmas fan, and we used to always try to think of trivia based on those Christmas specials. I'm gonna make sure he sees this. He's moved to Vermont, but I'm gonna make sure he sees this because I think he would really really enjoy it. So, is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know? Know about you? Where can they reach out to you? They can obviously get your books at their local bookstores or at the library.
We just really, really, really appreciate readers, and we love hearing back, and we will answer any question. And yeah, so we can be reached at tracywilton.com, and yeah, we're happy to send you out a bookmark if you want. Just reach out to us.
Yeah, and I'm also on Facebook, Twitter. I'm Rice _ Liz, and I have a Facebook page, LizIreland.com, and all over the usual places. And I'd love to hear from readers. It's really great.
Well, I want to thank all 3 of you for spending some time with us. Liz, I want to thank you for getting up extra early. I do appreciate it, and I want to thank Larissa Ackerman once again for always always supporting the library and helping us do this. And I hope when this is all over, we can start having conferences again and meet some of you.
Yeah, that would be so great, Jennifer. Yeah. Thank you.
So thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
I really enjoyed
meeting you. Thank you. It's really been a pleasure.
It's been great.
It's been great meeting Tracy and Patrice, too.
Nice to meet you.
Yes, it was nice to meet everyone. It was nice to see you again, Tracy. And we'll see you all again soon.
All right. Thank you.
Thank
bye,
you.
Everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank
have
you.
A good day.
So once again, I want to thank Liz Ireland and Tracy Hall and Patrice Wilton, who write as Tracy Wilton, for joining me this morning. And again, thanks to Larissa Ackerman at Kensington Books for always being so supportive of the show and her authors and setting something up. And one of these days I'm going to have Larissa on the show. Before I sign off for tonight, I do want to mention that Saturday, the 16th, we are having our fall festival at the Hunterdon County Library headquarters from 1 to 4. There'll be a scarecrow competition. Bring your own pumpkin to paint while enjoying live music from Long Hill String Band. Participate or in or view the HCL Scarecrow Competition. Winners will be announced at 4 p.m. So don't forget to stop by the library on Saturday so you don't miss out on all the fun. So Jim Gano will be in at 1 o'clock to take care of business. And until then, remember, wherever you are, you can call, stop in, or go online. Your library is always there for you. Have a great week.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
The death toll from a fire in southern Taiwan that engulfed a building overnight has taken roughly 50 souls. That's according to officials Thursday, who said the same amount of people were injured. Kaohsiung City Fire Department officials said the 13-story building caught fire around 3 a.m. Thursday, and the blaze was extremely fierce and destroyed many floors. Kaohsiung City is on the south end of the Taiwan island. The World Health Organization declared the formation of a committee to investigate the origins of COVID-19. The 26 experts were selected from over 700 applicants. Job one is to investigate caves near Wuhan where the natural bat origin is supposedly to have come from. The Chinese Communist government said no to the request in the past. President Biden is scheduled to meet with Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta as war and a humanitarian crisis continue after nearly 1 year in neighboring Ethiopia. USA Radio News.
If you're tired of big cable bills and want to cut the cord, you can still get Newsmax TV for free. Millions of Americans like you are watching Newsmax. It's available on all major cable systems or get it free on major streaming platforms. Watch Newsmax on smart TVs like Samsung, LG, Vizio, and more. Find Newsmax on your hub guide or use the TV app. Newsmax also streams free on Roku, Zumo, Pluto, Amazon Fire, TiVo, Apple TV, Chromecast, and more. More than 7 million people have downloaded the free Newsmax app on their smartphones. There's no paywall or subscription, so watch Newsmax anytime, anywhere. Forbes calls Newsmax a news powerhouse. And watch great shows with Mike Huckabee, Greg Kelly, Rob Schmidt, Diamond and Silk, Stinchfield, and a lot more. Find out why America is tuning in to Newsmax TV, the fastest-growing cable news channel. It's a source you can trust. Newsmax is real news for real people.
Since President Biden opened up the borders, more than 160,000 illegal immigrants have been released into the United States and are being strewn all over America. Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick on Fox News says what most Americans are thinking about President Biden making our country less safe.
What he needs to do is focus on securing the border and these 50,000 Haitians who say they've declared war on us and they don't care about our National Guard. Biden needs to pay attention to that. They're the risk. They're the danger to America.
Countries in South and Central America are warning America the mother of all caravans are heading to America and should start to arrive at the end of the month. Border Czar Vice President Kamala Harris has offered no leadership on the crisis this week. NASA's newest asteroid mission called Lucy, a spacecraft targeting space rocks that orbit ahead and behind Jupiter, is ready to begin its journey. The launch from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station in Florida is scheduled for Saturday at 5:34 a.m. Eastern. USA Radio News.
There's a lot of confusion about how to protect yourself from COVID, with guidelines and regulations changing by the week. One thing is certain, you need an accurate thermometer for your family to check for fever, the leading sign of flu and COVID. Only the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer has been proven accurate in more than 100 clinical studies. Don't rely on non-contact thermometers. They have no scientific studies behind them and can miss the fever that might mean COVID. Learn more at Exergen.com.
Exergen is changing the way the world takes temperature.
As the Biden administration is paying people not to work, One economic expert says that mentality is hurting the U.S. economy. Tim Berg from the Phoenix USA Radio News Bureau reports.
The shrinking U.S. workforce during the COVID pandemic is going to cripple the economic recovery. That's according to billionaire investor and businessman Barry Sternlicht. Sternlicht, the founder of Starwood Capital Group, which operates hotels as part of its portfolio, says the federal government should pay people to go back to work, not to stay home. Sternlicht telling CNBC,
people ask me what am I talk about this morning, and I said I'm going to talk about Janet Yellen and how wrong she is about the economy. I mean, there's 6 million unemployed, but there's 11.5 million jobs that are open, and we can't find. The whole service economy is in a crisis, whether it's a restaurant, a pizzeria, a laundromat, a small shop. Amazon can raise wages, no problem. They're making $1 trillion, the richest man on earth, or second richest man on earth now, I guess. You know, they can go to $15, $16, $17 in a warehouse, but mom and dad can't do that. So this labor force contraction, the fact that so many people are not looking for a job and the labor participation rate has dropped, is really hurting the underbelly of the U.S. economy. It can't really fully recover until these people come back to work.
From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
Thursday Night Football will feature the Eagles hosting Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. The game will be on Fox, NFL Network, and Amazon Prime. I'm Lance Pry, USA Radio News.